And good afternoon. This is Kim Arellano with Walk the Talk with Kim. I'm excited. We had a best of last week, which we had a repeat of the conversation we had part one with Ed and Connie Lincoln. And this week we're going to do part two. But before we jump into that, I just wanted to welcome everybody to the show today and to thank our sponsor, Pearson Law Firm. Expect expert representation and a wealth of experience. That is the Pearson Promise. Did want to also let you know that on the Brain Front, our one of our favorite nonprofit organizations, the Chris Elliott Fund for Glioblastoma Brain Cancer Research, is having their 10th annual Celebrity Golf Tournament July 25th at TPC Snoqualmie Ridge in Snoqualmie. Don't miss this opportunity to experience the Northwest's only Jack Nicklaus design course and to benefit brain cancer research, patient education, and new treatment opportunities and new treatment options. And there is going to be a sports celebrity meet and greet and cocktail party and auction the day before at the Bellevue Hyatt on July 24th. To register, just go to chriselliottfund.org, or you can find their information on walkthetalkwithkim.com website. Again, that's July 25th and as the golf tournament, and then July 24th is the celebrity meet and greet. And, of course, we love to support the Chris Elliott Fund. And this Friday, the Seattle Mariners is having Brain Tumor Awareness Night. And we are giving away two tickets to sit with us and about brain tumor awareness. And it's going to be at the Friday game. The seats are in sections 148, row 27, seats 15 and 16, for those of you that know that stadium by heart. Mm-hmm. And we're giving away those two. So if you call into our station at 425-373-5527 or toll free at 888-298-KKNW. Again, 425-373-5527. Let's do, what do you think, Eric? What number do we want to call in to get those free tickets? What number? Pick a number.
How about number three?
That's what I was thinking too. We're on the same wavelength. This is great. So caller number three, you call in. We're going to go ahead and give those tickets to you. Again, two seats for the Mariners game. That's this Friday night. I'm just asking. Do you know who they're playing?
I don't. I can find out.
Yeah, let's find out who they're playing. That might be helpful. So, again, call on in. And that is seats that are given to us by the Chris Elliott Fund for Glioblastoma and Brain Cancer Research. And we're going to have Brain Tumor Awareness Night out at Safeco Field. Although it's not Safeco Field anymore, right? Quest, no.
You're talking to.
I'm sorry. It's not Quest Field anymore. It's CenturyLink Field.
There you go.
That's what it is. Yes. Okay.
I just call it Mariner's Place.
Mariner's Place, Safeco Field.
That's right.
I'm usually not bad at sports, but evidently I forgot where the Mariners played. They're playing at CenturyLink Field, the former Quest Field. So that should be a lot of fun. Come join us. I'll be there with my family.
And take it on the Padres.
Oh, that'll be fun, playing San Diego. Yeah. Who do you think is going to win that game? What does the Padres' record look like?
I don't know. You know, the Padres have the Lord on their side, so because of the name. I don't know. I have no idea. Mariners are a formidable team, and Padres seem like they're doing all right, too, so we'll see.
Well, we're going to have a lot of brainy people there because we're doing brain cancer awareness and brain tumor awareness for the Chris Elliott Fund. And so, again, you can go to chriselliottfund.org. That's C-H-R-I-S-L-I-O-T-T, fund.org, and get more information about glioblastoma cancer and the great new things that they've come up with to help treat that cancer, and support brain cancer awareness and brain tumor awareness night, and then come golf with us. So it's all kinds of brain fun in July.
And I was going to say the Seattle Mariners website still says Safeco Field, so...
So it hasn't officially changed yet.
Yeah. You know, you might be thinking of Quest Field.
I'm thinking
no
of
longer
Quest Field.
Is Quest. Yeah.
Right.
And that's where the Seahawks are.
Oh, my gosh.
So, yeah. You know, so they're still at Safeco for the Seattle Mariners.
I'm so confused. Yes. Safeco Field.
Yes.
And, you know, my company I used to work for used to be a major sponsor of Safeco Field. And so I had it right the first time. And then I got thinking too hard about it.
There you go.
So I need to quit thinking. It's all about the brain, right?
I wouldn't recommend that. You've got a show to host here, so
I think we'll just go right to my guests and let them do all the talking.
I can certainly understand how that might be confusing for people. So.
Yeah, it's so Safeco Field. don't go to Quest/CenturyLink Field because we won't be there on Friday.
Right.
But we will be at Safeco Field on Friday with the Mariners, man. Can we just start over? Can we back up the last 5 minutes and do that over again?
Yeah. So are we giving those tickets away now?
Yes. Call now, 425-373-5527. Again, 425-373-5527 for 2 free tickets. And hope to see you there. So I would like to welcome back to our show the wonderful guests. We have Ed and Connie Lincoln, and they are area entrepreneurs and philanthropists and have an incredible amount of information. We had them on the show a week before last, and we replayed the show last week. I was introduced to Ed through, interesting channels, but I had an opportunity to read his book, Life Through the Rearview Mirror. And, I originally had read the book because I wanted to have some really good questions to ask you. And as I just mentioned to Ed, what I think I've discovered, whether intentioned or not intentioned, is some incredible insight in the mind of someone who is a successful entrepreneur and a successful philanthropist. And I just wanted to acknowledge that. I really appreciated getting these stories out of the book. But I wanted to talk a bit about mentoring. So this is something that's important to me because I had some really great mentors in business growing up, and I was in an industry for, almost 20 years, and I had a lot of really great opportunities and people who took me under their wing and learned some pretty incredible lessons about lots of different things they don't teach you in business school. But I've noticed now that I'm out in the business world and I do coaching and training and I work with organizations on business behavior that the next generation coming up, they don't stay very long to create those mentoring bonds. And I'm concerned about that. But I thought, rather than try and solve that problem, let's look at and talk with you who's been there. You've been mentored and you've mentored others in business growing up. What's some of the things that has changed from the days when you were mentored maybe by your dad? And Connie, you have a great story. I'd love you to share about how you got involved in business with your family. To how did that change with the different generations as you got older? Now the next generation is coming up. Did anything change, do you think? Or is anything changing now?
Well, I guess that could very well be a handful of things. But life was simpler. And so when my father wanted to mentor me on digging a ditch and doing it correctly, I was eager. I mean, I didn't have a computer at home. I didn't have a cell phone, I was just happy to be hanging around Dad. Mm-hmm. And so he taught me dozens of jobs, different jobs. And he had gone through the tough times in the 40s and the 30s. And so he had bounced around to a lot of jobs, and he didn't have his dad. His dad was not alive. But he knew the importance of being a dad, and I don't know where he got it. Mm. But I would do anything to be working alongside him, whether it's painting a building or digging a ditch or pulling apart or selling a part. I was selling parts for him. He was in the auto parts business. Auto wrecking business. I was selling parts when I was 12, 13 years old, and all excited because, the customer there and, customer took his wallet out. I mean, he was buying.
Yeah, there you go.
So I was ready to write it up.
What do you think makes a good mentor?
Patience. A mentor needs patience. Mm. Okay. And then the one that he's mentoring needs to be a good listener. Because the wisdom is being passed, and you got to catch it. And there's distractions. I mean, the distractions may be what time of the day it is, or if it's close to lunchtime, or, whatever little things are going on. You see today, people are running around with the earphones. For music. Music mm-hmm. in your ears. And so they're connected to the music. And in most cases, they're not learning anything other than what the music is playing. And so mm-hmm. they don't see things go by. They don't, even when they're working, they just kind of, it's a blur because they're distracted with the pleasantness of the music.
I think sometimes we learn from our mentors things that they aren't consciously teaching us.
That's
it's
right.
Mannerisms. It's the way they treat customers. It's the way they value themselves, those types of things.
Very, very true.
Yeah. So Connie, you started, similar to Ed, in that young you were in the workforce.
That's true. My uncle owned a chain of drugstores, and my mother was a single mother, and so my brothers and I all worked in his drugstores. And at a very young age, we all learned a lot about business. I don't think consciously, just maybe subconsciously in a way, a lot of value of hard work. And we were expected to work for not very much money back in those days. But I think Ed's right. I think that the people around me, the other employees that kind of took me under their wing, not necessarily my uncle, but the employees in the store would teach me different values and different things. Maybe unconsciously I grasped that and didn't know that. So.
How do you know? Because I had asked the question before we came on. I said, do you remember someone that you had mentored? And right off the bat, you came up with a name. How do you know when there's somebody that could use you, and then you have that? How do you know when you find? I mean, I'm sure you just know. But what is it about somebody that you think that's open to being mentored?
First of all, I think interest. They're expressing an interest in whatever it is, a topic that they might feel you know a little bit about. Or I have a granddaughter who really wants to learn how to sew, and so I took her under my wing to show her the basics, and now she's taking sewing classes and learning other techniques and so forth. And I think between the other grandmothers and myself, we all love to sew and quilt, and so she's developed that.
Mm-hmm.
And people that we were around, employees that we were around, would ask us questions, and we, Ed and I, were both very open. Mm-hmm. And liked to share. And they'd say, you know, what do you do about this, or, you know, whatever. And we would try to take the time to share with them.
Yeah. I think that's wonderful. I'm a horsewoman myself, and I've noticed that my kids are starting to pick that up. Quite favorite. And my boy, who I never thought would be interested, I found him out in the pasture last week playing with the pony and riding the pony. Mm-hmm. So it's sometimes it's not a conscious thing to mentor somebody. You almost have to go, that person, when they're ready to learn, I just need to be here when they're ready.
That's right.
It's, yeah.
I can remember a time where I was 16 years old, of course, new driver's license, but I'd been, you know, driving in the back roads for quite a while. And dad said, you want to learn to drive the semi truck? Because we had a semi that would haul our scrap steel to the mill in West Seattle. And sure, you know, I was about 16 in 3 or 4 months. And I was a little nervous. It's a big truck, you know. And he just rode alongside me as a passenger and told me how to shift the gears and how to swing wide on the turns and all that. And I was so excited. I mean, I was probably the youngest semi driver in Seattle.
Ah!
I mean, I don't know. But it was really fun.
Yeah.
You know, but it was scary because I knew that I didn't want to mess up.
Right. No, exactly. I learned how to drive on a tractor because, you know, that's how I can go pick up the wood out in the bin. Dad said, hey, you know what? Let's teach her how to drive the tractor so I can go do some work. I loved it. I had a blast. We're going to take a break. And when we come back, we're going to talk more about ITEMBA, the organization that Ed and Connie have worked very hard for. And we're going to learn about South Africa and some really incredible things when we come back. You're listening to Walk the Talk with Kim. Don't forget to call us at 425-373-5527 for those tickets. We're taking the third caller. Thank you for listening.
Since 1977, Pearson Law Professionals have compassionately guided individuals and their families through the legal process to seek justice for insurance disputes and personal injury claims. Pearson Law has secured justice in civil matters with a network of resources, wealth of experience, and a compassionate attitude. That's the Pearson Promise. Call 800-423-8473. That's 800-423-8473 for a free case evaluation. Or check them out at walkthetalkwithkim.com.
Remember the pink tow truck? It was a Seattle icon. But did you know the mastermind behind the marketing was also one of Seattle's successful entrepreneurs? Learn life lessons from Ed Lincoln by reading his new autobiography, Life Through the Rearview Mirror. Available at area bookstores and online, go to walkthetalkwithkim.com and click on the link.
Cut through the clutter with the latest up-to-date information on happenings in the world of real estate, mortgage, and personal finance. Tune in Wednesdays at 3 p.m. for Brashonomics, an upbeat, interesting, and informative hour you don't want to miss. Hosted by Ben Brashen, you'll be entertained and informed as Ben and his guests of industry professionals share ideas and strategies you can use every day in your own life. You won't want to miss this show. Brashonomics has the information you need to stay in the know. Tune in every Wednesday at 3 p.m. You'll be glad you did.
There's an exciting new astrology hour Tuesdays at 5 p.m. with Deborah Silverman. Deborah's unique blend of psychology and astrology turns planetary language into plain English. Join us for an interactive hour that's guaranteed to give you personal insights in a fun and entertaining way. Tune in to Deborah Silverman Live. Whatever your life question, marriage, job, family, relocation, or just curiosity, call for a live reading Tuesdays at 5 p.m. and visit Deborah's website at DeborahSilvermanAstrology.com.
The search is over. You found the station that's not afraid to be different. Alternative Talk, 1150 AM.
Welcome back. You're listening to Walk the Talk with Kim. I am Kim Ariano. I went to that Alanis Morissette concert when she was at the Gorge in 1996.
All right.
That was awesome. That was a really great concert.
Sounds like it was a long time ago.
Yeah, it was a lot of fun. So we like listening to a little bit of Alanis Morissette. We are back with Ed and Connie Lincoln, and we are talking a bit about the book Life Through the Rearview Mirror, and I highly recommend this book. And if you go to Walk the Talk with Kim and go down under our sponsor section, you can just click on that link down there, and it'll take you to where you can purchase the book, or you can find it at Barnes & Noble and Borders Books. Again, it's Life Through the Rearview Mirror. That's hard to say. Ed Lincoln is the author of that, and he is the creator of the pink tow truck that was in Seattle for years and years, for those of you that missed the episodes there. So a Seattle icon, and I'm just tickled pink that you guys came on the show to talk about your organizations and things. So a proceeds of this book you have designated to go through to some of the organizations that you are supporting, some nonprofit organizations. One in particular is an organization called Atemba. And we talked very briefly last episode, but I want to spend a lot more time. And I want to understand, obviously, about the organization, what they're doing. But I also want to peel apart a little bit about what it was about that organization in particular, out of all the organizations that you could have chosen, and what you look for when you look for an organization that you're willing to give your time to.
We went to South Africa as guests of Atemba, and we witnessed firsthand the children in the Valley of a Thousand Hills. I'm sure that some of you have read books that have that in it. And as you look off the back side of this hillside, you see this thousands of rolling hills and little shacks here and there. And in this South Africa, they have the highest incident of HIV/AIDS. So there are millions of orphans there. So this group that we really attached ourselves to decided to do something than just rather than setting up an orphanage, because other people are doing that. Other countries are coming in and setting up orphanages. We wanted to do something a little bit different. We wanted to take children, have a mother and a father come in and be foster parents. But the foster parent program is very different in some ways. It's set aside a little different from other countries or other foster home programs by the fact that at 18, the children are not let go. They're not out on their own. You don't say goodbye. Go find out what you're going to do in life. And we work with them. If they don't have the capability of going to college, they might have an interest in a trade school, a trade of some type, plumbing, electrical, cooking, a lot of different types of things. And so we encourage them in that process to go for their dreams. And to be successful would be just to follow their dreams and do what it is that they have an interest in doing.
And we pay for that.
And we pay for that, yes. So we're sort of the fundraising arm of the association here in the United States. There's people on the board with us from the U.S. And we have the opportunity to go back and forth to South Africa on our own nickel, of course. Mm-hmm. And the reason, another reason why we chose this is because we learned, we got to know the people who are actually running it. And the integrity is so strong there. The fellow who is actually in charge or the president of the association doesn't take a dime for a wage. And he's a successful entrepreneur, doesn't need the income, and just really wants to give back to the children. And in the beginning, the first three children we took in were two sisters and a brother. They were, the two girls were teenagers, and they had a younger brother. And we work with a social worker. The social worker is the person who finds the children and brings them to us. And she, these three children were at the burial of their mother. And fortunately, the mother had a really strong ethic of getting that education and really instilled that in the children. And so they're at the burial, and their grandmother walked away when she found out that the mother had actually died from AIDS, who she had gotten from her husband. Mm. So she abandoned these children, and they had to, all of a sudden, like millions of other children out there, they had to try and go to school because they knew that was important to their mother, figure out how they were going to eat. And they were going to neighbors and asking for food, and that had to have been really, really hard. So they're the first three children that we got, and their names are Peaceful, Promise, and their brother's name escapes me at the moment. But anyway, Peaceful was the head of her household at 15 years old when her mother died, and the family, like I said, turned away. So she was responsible for her sister, who was 13, and her brother, who was 8 at the time. And Peaceful was in her last year of high school and had to study during the day, and they had no light in the house when they came home. So she had to make do with what she could do to be successful. So when she came to us, she was able to graduate. She's now in college and wow. studying to be a social worker. And she's in an honors program. She's working close to Durban, and obviously, and this is just outside of Durban where the organization is. And so she'll graduate with a degree in social work. And so she really wants to give back eventually to the organization by helping other children. Mm-hmm. And there's other stories like that. These children are abandoned on doorsteps. They found one on the road. They didn't, but the mm-hmm. social worker, somebody brought these children to her. And they've just had really horrendous beginnings.
Yeah.
But we're finding with these children, they're just blossoming. They're just really like any child that you would give an opportunity to have be clean and have food and rest and have the opportunity to go to school. In Africa, that's a huge thing to be able to go to school.
Mm-hmm. Now, correct me if I'm wrong, because I don't know that much about the history, but these would be children or grandchildren of apartheid, right? So the parents that are dying of AIDS, they lived under apartheid. Is that correct?
The parents did, yes.
The parents did, not the kids. Mm-hmm. So they're kind of the next generation coming up. And I know that a lot of the industry that the African-Americans, or not African-Americans, blacks in South Africa, they worked in the diamond mines, correct? And so, you know, what kinds of opportunities are out there for these kids in terms, you know, if they had no education, obviously not much, but even with education is...
Oh, there's opportunities now.
Yeah, good.
Yeah, definitely. Promise... There's Peaceful Promise, and Promise right now is pursuing a career in being a travel agent.
Oh,
she has a real interest in traveling and helping people travel, and so that's what she wants to do.
Their main town right there is Durban, mm-hmm. Durban, South Africa, and it's a large town, so that's where the opportunities could come from.
Do you think they're integrated as much as they could be or should be?
Oh, I definitely think it's getting there. We've been kind of isolated, I guess, in this area. Uh-huh. So with the children, so it's hard to say because we haven't lived there, and I really don't know. But I suspect that it's becoming more integrated.
Mm-hmm.
There's probably pockets of areas where maybe it's not so much. But it used to be, they have the largest population of the Indian people outside of India in South Africa.
Gotcha.
And it used to be, if you were very wealthy, you could live in a house, but maybe next door to you had somebody very poor, but it all was the Indian community or the black community or the whatever, the Caucasian community. That's not the case anymore. You drive into a housing area and you see all walks of life there, all different ethnic backgrounds in the part of area that we've been to. So I think it's getting more like the U.S. is.
It's going to, takes a lot of years.
Yeah, it has. Louise Wall, who's a close friend of mine, who's been on the show, has sponsored the show. She's from South Africa. And in the 80s, she was part of a group of kids that would go around to other Caucasian kids and explain to them that, they're not different and, really try to get people to think differently about apartheid. And she's fascinating to listen to because she has a completely different perspective growing up in that environment than we do. And I know her. What is it about South Africans, specifically the children, that warms your heart? What is their spirit like?
We, for instance, went to a school and we had a chance to go to an orphanage while we were there as well. And their little faces just light up when we walked in and they wanted to touch us. And they wanted to, they were just
white person.
It was just interesting. Here they are, poor, health isn't always the best. Some are missing teeth because they haven't had good dental care. But their little smiles are just so bright and so cheerful, and they have so little to be thankful for, but they are.
Kids are kids, and they're in school with other kids, and they're just making the best of it.
Wow.
And they are, smiles are genuine. They're not phony.
Well, we talked about mentorship. You give a child an opportunity to make something of himself. It infects everybody around them. So I think that's wonderful what you're doing. We do have to take a break, but when we come back, I know you have a couple more stories you want to share with us, and we want to get information about the organization so that people know that they can go look it up and get some additional information. You're listening to Walk the Talk with Kim. You can get more information about Intema on walkthetalkwithkim.com. When we come back, we'll be talking more with Ed and Connie Lincoln.
Your lover when you go away. Keep on believing tomorrow brings a better day.
Have you heard the phrase, "The beatings will continue until morale improves"? To organizations, employees are the biggest assets and biggest fans. If they're not feeling heard or appreciated, the bottom line will suffer. For mission-driven organizations, the reliance on employees and managers to rally around the core messaging is critical for success. At Walk the Talk for Success, we provide leadership best practices, education, and communication strategies for mission-driven organizations. Whether you're a business of one, middle manager, or leader in a large company or nonprofit, our experiential workshops and focused on organizational psychology will assist you in achieving success with your messaging and vision. Call for a free consultation today, 425-888-9790, or check us out at www.walkthetalkwithkim.com.
Walk the Talk for Success, achieving your message through understanding human behavior.
Want to play on two wheels in your own backyard? Throw your bike on the rack and head east to the Snoqualmie Valley for the 2011 Tour de Peaks Bike Ride. Mark your calendars for Sunday, August 14th, and choose the 25, 50, or 100-mile course through some of the most spectacular scenic roads in the state of Washington. Don't miss the live music and microbrews at the finish. Log on to tourdepeaks.org for more information or to register. That's tourdepeaks.org. See you there.
Hi, this is Julie Forbes. Join me on Wednesday afternoons from 2 to 3 p.m. for the Dog Talk Show, an evolved perspective on life with dogs. Listen to discussions on dog-related topics and call in to voice your opinion or ask my opinion about your dog. We will talk about everything from dog behavior to pet food to dog training programs in prisons. The Dog Talk Show, an evolved perspective on life with dogs. I'm your host, Julie Forbes. Tune in Wednesdays from 2 to 3 p.m. on Alternative Talk 1150.
Whether they're working on an automotive accident case or helping a client injured by a defective product, the Pearsons are passionate about serving their clients. Their successful approach tackles the right issue at the right time with the best tools and expertise available. Clients rave about the Pearson Law Team's savvy abilities to ensure clients' voices are heard and to demystify the legal process and explaining choices and opportunities. Contact them at 800-423-8473 or PearsonLawFirm.com. That's P-E-A-R-S-O-N LawFirm.com. Or check out WalkTheTalkWithKim.com for more.
No other station brings you this much variety. Welcome to Alternative Talk, 1150 AM.
You're listening to Walk the Talk with Kim. Welcome back. We're talking with Ed and Connie Lincoln, and we're talking about an organization called Atemba. And this organization provides homes, foster parents, educational opportunities for orphans of the AIDS epidemic in South Africa. And I wanted to talk real briefly. You had mentioned, Ed, on the break that you had an opportunity, you both had an opportunity to visit the AIDS hospital. First thing that popped up for me is, there are so many advances in treatment of AIDS now. You don't hear about people in the United States anyway with the drugs and what's available to them that you can live a long time with the disease. It sounds like that medical opportunity still is not available to people in Africa. Is that true?
I think part of it was a stigma. And I believe originally when AIDS was still just kind of ravishing through the country that the government was not necessarily acknowledging it at first. And so people are known to be like have tuberculosis or they have other things that come as a result of having HIV or AIDS.
Oh.
And so those are talked about, but the AIDS was not talked about. But now that's changed. And they do have clinics and they do hand out medicine. But one of the things we learned in 2005 when we were there was that oftentimes the medication they took was almost the result of that
reaction.
Yeah, the reaction to that drug was almost as bad as having the disease.
Uh-huh.
And so possibly now with the new drugs that have come out since that time, that's been 6 years ago, that might have been gotten better. And I would hope so, that they wouldn't be as sick taking the drugs as they were back then.
Yeah, see, and their condition was so weakened and the drug is so powerful that they couldn't stomach the drug.
So they didn't even realize that they had AIDS until they were really far down the path.
Well, I think so. Why they didn't? It was such a stigma, like with the mother of Peaceful and Promise passing away. People just didn't want to admit that that was what caused it.
And you had said that the grandmother walked away from that. I can't understand that, but I can understand. Like you said, the stigma, the society and the culture, we can't imagine that here in the United States, but certainly in those countries, how unfortunate.
It is. It's very unfortunate. As a grandmother, I could not imagine walking away from my grandchildren. And I don't want to pass judgment on her, but that's really a difficult story to hear.
Yeah, it is. It is difficult. What was it like going through the hospital, Ed?
Well, my first concern was, what can I touch and what can't I? I've never been in an AIDS hospital, never desired to be in one. And all of a sudden, I was looking at, actually, it was an opportunity.
Yeah.
And if everybody else is willing to go, I guess I'm willing to go, too. I'm sure that lots of people that had AIDS don't ever get into the hospital. They're in their tent dying or in their shanty dying over a period of, time. I don't know who gets into the hospital. It was full. There wasn't much room for anybody else. Mm. And it was no big hospital. It was very medium or small. So it was like an impossible problem, but there was some progress being made.
The hope is the education piece, being able to provide the home and the mentorship that they lost when their parents passed away, but being able to offer that, I hope that that at least the ignorance about the disease and the stigma and the social I don't know what the word I'm thinking of, but the stigma associated with that disease, hopefully with education, will keep those kids safe so they don't have the same.
Right.
That's true.
The same fate. And that's wonderful. So I'm trying to remember, we didn't talk about this yet on the radio. We've talked about it before. I keep forgetting. I try not to talk with too many of my guests on the show before because we have these really great conversations and then I can't remember if we talked about them on air or not. But what made you decide, you know, put your philanthropy hat on? What makes you decide or how do you choose an organization like Atemba, like some other organizations that you had recommended to me? How do you know? I mean, what do you look for when you look for an organization that you want to spend your time on?
Well, first of all, what is it they're seeking to do? In this case, they were trying to help children that didn't have any hope at all. And that, of course, captured us after meeting the children that we were surrounded with. We could see the value of that. The second thing, I guess, I look at personally is oftentimes if I call an organization, I want to know what is your administrative fees versus what actually goes to the project. And I'm not against an organization, the people that run it, the administration, making some money, but I don't want to see a very high paid person or persons. And then you're thinking it's all your dollars are always going out to help all these people when in fact it's not. Mm-hmm. And so that's one of the first questions that I'll ask personally.
So as a lesson to the executive directors of nonprofits out there and for those doing fundraising, understanding the ratio, the financial ratio of your organization really is something that people are going to be looking at highly upon. And I know some organizations do espouse that. I'm not sure all do. And so that I think would be something that an organization would definitely want to look into is making sure they understand those numbers. And we were talking briefly, you think 10% is a pretty good number. So 10% for the administration and overhead and under. So the other 90%, 90%+ is going towards the actual project.
That's correct.
That's a good thing.
At Atemba, the person who is now running it doesn't take any money at all. And that is another thing that actually drew us to it because we really want to see these children helped. We want the money to go to them for food, clothing, education, because in South Africa, education is not free like it here is here.
I think if you, we don't do very much at all on telephone solicitations. Mm-hmm. So in fact, almost nothing. We like to find the people and the organizations that we want to support. Check them out without the pressure of a phone call. Mm-hmm. You could ask XYZ what's your ratio of giving to the organization and how much to take to run it, and they can give you any number that sounds good that may not even be true. So, you know, really don't want to do it over the phone.
It's tough. We do get the telemarketer calls from nonprofit organizations. I think fundraising specifically with nonprofits is the question I get asked the most because, of course, every organization is like, okay, so how do you do fundraising? And, of course, I always want to go back that fundraising, while critically important, is not as important as making sure that your board is sound and that you've got contributions coming from your board and that you have people in place that understand and live and breathe the mission, that you understand what your core cornerstones of the mission are, that you have a good foundation. Fundraising will come because people will be attracted to the soundness of your organization. And you had mentioned to me, Ed, that one of the things that you look at in addition to that ratio is also the length that the organization, also their business. You want to look at how their business as a nonprofit performs.
Right. And if somebody's been in business for, you know, a year or two, that's way too short. You know, you need to look at their long, if you were buying mutual funds, you look at somebody's 10, 20, 30 year record. And the longer the better to know how well they manage. And, you know, it's not as easy to check these people out, but they have to do their postings and things. And so there is government information. You have to seek it out.
Well, let me ask you this question. So, you know, obviously having, and this is for both nonprofit entrepreneurs and business environments, you want the longevity, a proven track record. But somebody starting out in the business, how do you know that it would be, do you know that there's a certain type of individual or a personality or that feeling? You and I had talked about that feeling that you get from someone who you think would respond well to mentoring. Is there a feeling when you start to involve yourself within an organization that says, you know, they've got something, you know, they don't have the financials or they don't have the longevity, but I think it's worth my investment of time into this organization. What are some of those clues?
Well, one of them would be the investment of time. By investing your time, you're going to find out things that you wouldn't know just by investing your dollar. And the other is to go cautiously. If you want to give some to them, you know, that's fine. Do it in a way that you just don't go a whole hog. Because if they are phony, you're going to lose everything.
Mm.
And if you invest a little, then you can check it out, see how they're doing.
Mm-hmm.
But getting involved is big time.
Mm-hmm. Good.
See, we went to South Africa because Focus on the Family in Denver invited us to go there to check out South Africa, not to do anything other than check it out.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what, you know, what we did.
So is that one of the best practices that you would recommend is to, for these nonprofits to invite people to see, you know, touch and feel the people that are impacted?
Absolutely.
Yeah, as well as a person who is going to be making an investment, even investment of time. I've worked with volunteers for a long time, and if there's the volunteer that says, I'd like to check out your organization first, I want to come to one of your events first to see how, that's much longer of a relationship than somebody that says, just put me wherever you need me, because it's hard to make a good fit when that's you're doing right. that. Oh, very, very good. Well, we're going to take a break, and when we come back, we're going to wrap up this wonderful month that we've had with the Lincolns. I've just been tickled pink again that we've had them on the show. You're listening to Walk the Talk with Kim. We're going to have information on Atumba, as well as how you can get the book, Life Through the Rearview Mirror, at www.walkthetalkwithkim.com. And we'll see you back here in just a couple minutes.
You know, I'm about to check it out.
Jerry and Michelle Pearson of the Pearson Law Firm are local residents just like you who have a passion to help those who have been wronged in our community. If you have a personal injury, automobile accident, property hazard, industrial injury, defective product, or nursing home neglect issue, award-winning Pearson Law Firm can help anywhere in Washington. Contact them today for a free case evaluation at 800-423-8473. That's 800-423-8473, or check them out at walkthetalkwithkim.com.
Remember the pink tow truck? It was a Seattle icon. But did you know the mastermind behind the marketing was also one of Seattle's successful entrepreneurs? Learn life lessons from Ed Lincoln by reading his new autobiography, Life Through the Rearview Mirror. Available at area bookstores and online, go to walkthetalkwithkim.com and click on the link.
Ever feel like strangling your boss?
You little!
Or maybe you're the boss and your employees make you want to strangle yourself. Drop that noose and tune in or call in to The Boss Show, Wednesdays at 5 p.m. on Alternative Talk 1150. Hosts Jim Hessler and Steve Motenko, co-owners of Path Forward Leadership Development, will take your calls on everything boss-related, offering deep insights with a dollop of outrageousness. The Boss Show, workplace wisdom with heart and humor, Wednesday afternoons at 5.
Hello, this is Kim Ariano of Walk the Talk with Kim. The reality is staggering. South Africa has one of the highest incidences of HIV/AIDS in the world. This fact results in millions of orphans left in the care of other family members, friends, or fending for themselves in child-headed households. Focus on Atemba offers orphans and vulnerable children a new direction in life through loving foster care homes with committed parents and a real opportunity for a good education. Please consider sponsoring a child to receive the needed stability to change their world. Go to atembakids.org or follow the links from walkthetalkwithkim.com.
Open your ears, open your heart, open your mind. Alternative Talk, 1150 AM.
You're listening to Walk the Talk with Kim. I'm Kim Ariano. Welcome back for our final segment of the show today with Ed and Connie Lincoln, Seattle area icons and entrepreneurs. And we were talking about the organization Atemba, and you had a story that you wanted to share, Connie, about Musa.
Musa. Musa was a young man when he came to us. He had been in his auntie, I'm not exactly sure it was a true auntie, they call the people that, had taken him and 11 other children in, and several of those children were special needs children, and so he wasn't getting a lot of attention. His schooling had fallen way behind, and so when he joined Atimba, we thought he might not be able to finish high school. We tried to figure out what to do. So we developed different things where we brought some people had tutors, some of the children had tutors, and several of them were fine for school, so we sent them to area schools. But for him, he was old enough that he had missed out. And we watched him to grow once he joined Atimba, and the parents that he was living with were pretty strict.
House parents,
the foster parents. They were very strict, and that was kind of tough after he'd kind of been on his own. But he did well. We watched him grow into one of the nicest, most confident, outgoing, personal young men. And not only will he finish high school, but he's actually thinking of trying to be the head boy his last year. Hmm. And that's kind of equal to somebody wanting to be president of the student council.
Oh, wow.
And so he has just progressed from this shy child who didn't feel very secure to this confident young man now under the tutelage of the foster parents. His brother, who is also in Atimba, TK, says that Musa is just the right person to handle that job, the student council president person, because he's so concerned about doing the right thing and he's being respectful to everybody. When first at Atimba, he struggled a bit under the authority, but with the love that the mother and father provided, he has just blossomed. Now he has dreams to become a chef, and he loves to cook the meals when you go over there. He loves to cook. And he wants to become famous enough that he can purchase more property to build more homes to take in more vulnerable children.
Wow.
And so between Peaceful and Promise, these two young people I've shared with you today, they both have the desire to come back, Peaceful, with their social work, and Musa to be successful so that he can now help other children eventually. And I just think that speaks a lot for the organization to have these children want to not just go off and do their own thing, but they want to come back and they want to help others
wonderful. And they could just get their education and leave.
Oh yeah,
absolutely,
and not want to make it better for that. That shows character of the community, yeah, and character of the organization. I love the stories. Now, when you go to the website, and remind me of the website, it's itembakids.org.
Okay, ITHEMBA. Kids.org.
Yeah.
And on it, we all have the possibility of choosing a child or to help and give a one-time donation, or you can give a donation every month. You're not locked into doing anything.
Talk about the suggested amount for the month.
The suggested amount is like $25, but it could be less. It could be more. And they also, you can go in and help with a home. That would help provide the food, you know, help with clothing, that kind of thing. So you can pick one of the houses that house these children on that website and say, okay, I want to donate so much to the home that would help per month or for just that time. And that way you can help provide the food and clothing and schooling for these young people.
And give us some sense, an idea on how much we're talking about. Like how much is a month of education for a child maybe, or how much is it to support a child for a month, you think?
You know, I do have those numbers at home, but I don't have them in my head. I'm sorry.
Oh, no, that's okay. I asked that question off the cuff. But, yeah, I think the point that I think it's helpful is that a little bit of American money goes a very long way in a place like South Africa.
That's right. And if we were to say that if you gave $100 a month, it would take care of the schooling and this and that. But a lot of people can't afford $100 a month. So, you know, $25 a month would be terrific. And if you can only do 25 one time, and that's, you know, we'll accept that.
Well, and if you get 10 people that donate 10, there you go.
There you go.
Yeah,
that's right.
So there's a lot of different ways of looking at it. And we are a community. The whole world is a community at this point. And if we don't take care of our weakness and the ones that need it, then that's, you know, takes everybody to a whole different level and to a whole different place. So I really applaud what you're doing. And thank you so much for spending so much time on the show with us. I wanted to close with a story from the book because we haven't talked about any of the stories in the book. And there's a story in there about the MGM Grand, and I want you to tell that one. But after I read that chapter, I didn't remember. I was 10 years old at the time when it happened. But I went back and I did some research on it, and I'm just amazed at what you had went through. So anybody who has, I was talking with a friend of mine. She lived in Nevada at the time, and she said, they did, really? So that's in the book, too. There's a whole chapter on this experience that you had on the 19th floor, and a real wonderful story of survival. You've had so many things that you guys have gone through. It's amazing. But I want you to tell the story. And it's one of my favorite stories in the book. Made me laugh out loud. About the 10 most wanted.
Oh my goodness! When you're in the towing business, you have all kinds of customers. You know, some of them from California or whatever. But in this particular instant, there was a hit or a red alert that happened when my daughter typed in the information on the car that we had just impounded, brought in, and the police said, don't let that car go. And 10, it was the 10 most wanted person on their list out of Texas, I believe. He was out of Texas. And the car had Texas plates on it. And so the police said, we will surround your place. You know, just call us when he comes in. Well, I didn't know if they were going to surround, and my daughter, you know, was handling it. I didn't even know about it. You know, I was in a different office. And so anyway, I came down and stumbled upon what was going on and still didn't know what was going on because I went to get lunch for everybody. So they shooed me out of there, and the guy comes in to get his car, and the police were there hiding everywhere. One of the group of policemen, four or five, were hiding under the pink tow truck. You know, they were being shielded by the fence there. And they came running in when the guy was in the yard to get his car. And they tackled him and hauled him off and handcuffed him. And hours later, the guy comes in to get his car. And I said, whoa.
Unescorted by the police this time,
yeah,
right?
Was the wrong guy. He bought the car from the 10 most wanted. And so he hadn't put it in his name. And so the police, when he proved his identity, then the police released him.
We decided he probably would never come back to Seattle again.
Never again. Talk about having a bad day. First of all, your car gets towed.
Yeah.
Second of all, you go to pick it up and you've got the Seattle Police Department. And when you described the story in the book, I was just laughing because evidently one of the police officers tripped and fell and his gun went off and they were hiding behind the
Laurel
tow.
Laurel and Hardy. Yeah. Laurel and Hardy.
The part that made me laugh the hardest was you were coming back with burgers and fries for everybody. And he said, I had a fry sticking out of my mouth and I'm looking around and people are hiding behind the tow truck. And I was just, you know, only to Ed Lincoln would you be walking around with fries hanging out of your mouth and there's the Seattle Police Department surrounding your building. The book is full of really funny, cute stories like that. So thank you so much for sharing. And
thank you so much for coming on the show.
Oh, absolutely. It was my pleasure. And you can hear repeat of the show. You can download that on iTunes. You can also go to walkthetalkwithkim.com and you can listen to it right there, or you can download it on podcast. You can also get information on the book, Life Through the Rearview Mirror, and information on Atemba on walkthetalkwithkim.com. And you can also, let me think of what else you can do. I think that's about it. We're going to have some video going with that as well. We want to thank Pearson Law Firm. Expect expert representation and a wealth of experience. That is the Pearson Promise. And don't forget that we have got the event coming up for the Chris Elliott Fund, the 10th Annual Celebrity Golf Tournament on July 25th. And July 24th is the Sports Celebrity Meet and Greet. All that information on Walk the Talk with Kim. Thank you so much for listening to the show today. We really loved having you, and we're very excited and lucky to have the Lincolns with us. I hope you have and enjoy a wonderful day and go out there and do some good in the community.
Uh-huh.
Hello, this is Kim Ariano of Walk the Talk with Kim.
The reality is staggering. South Africa has one of the highest incidences of HIV/AIDS in the world. This fact results in millions of orphans left in the care of other family members, friends, or fending for themselves in child-headed households. Focus on Itemba offers orphans and vulnerable children a new direction in life through loving foster care homes with committed parents and a real opportunity for a good education. Please consider sponsoring a child to receive the needed stability to change their world. Go to itembakids.org or follow the links from walkthetalkwithkim.com.